Today's broadcast was originally recorded on April 1st, 2024.
All Americans need a Bible in their home, and I have many. It's my favorite book. It's a lot of people's favorite book. This Bible is a reminder that the biggest thing we have to bring back America and to make America great again is our religion. Mm. Religion is so important. It's so missing, but it's going to come back, and it's going to come back strong, just like our country is going to come back strong. I'm proud to endorse and encourage you to get this Bible. We must make America pray again.
Yes, we must make them. Happy Easter. We're back.
I fall off my chair, and I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
I am. From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is the broadcast. That's heard on KPFK, 90.7 FM in LA, 98.7 in Santa Barbara, 93.7 in San Diego, 99.5 in Ridgecrest and China Lake, California. Also in California, in Red Bluff and Redding on KFOI, Round Mountains KKRN. In Oregon on the Central Coast on KYAQ, Cottage Grove's KSO, Eugene's KEPW. Lanchester, Pennsylvania's W News, Maui, Hawaii's KAKU, in Columbus, Ohio on WGRN, Palinville, New York's WLPP, Rochester, New York's WRFZ, down in New Orleans on WHIV, out in Gallup, New Mexico on KNIZ, Concord, New Hampshire's WNHN, Fayetteville, Arkansas's KPSQ, in Seattle on KODX, Fairmont, West Virginia's WEFR, Janesville, Wisconsin's WADR, and Minneapolis, St. Paul's AM 950 KTNF. We also stream coast to coast and around the globe every day on the internets, on the Progressive Voices channel, Netroots Radio, Radio for Humans, NicoleSandler.com, Radio Free Brooklyn, No Lies Radio, Detour Talk, and most of your favorite podcast sites. Blanketing Planet Earth. I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me, from bradblog.com. Thank you very much for joining us today. We are back after a much-needed spring break, which, though pre-scheduled, came fortuitously, as my doctor recommended, a week of vocal rest for me. As he's not the first one to tell me to shut the hell up.
This
but,
is true.
I was overtaken by a bizarre case of laryngitis, seemingly part of my many fun post-COVID ailments after being first struck with it after the first of the year. Anyway, hopefully I'm back at full vocal strength today, but we've got not one but two guests joining us momentarily to ease my burden either way, and to get us caught up on a bunch of the stuff. All the stuff, well, a bunch of the stuff that we missed, either happily or not, during our break last week.
Yeah, I know. You turn your back for 5 minutes and all hell breaks loose.
Desi, I had Desi Doyen there is our producer. She's back as well. I joked before the break that I had arranged for Donald Trump's criminal hush money trial to be pushed back a few weeks into April, so it didn't take place while we were gone. As originally scheduled, and that there would be no major primaries last week. But while that might have portended a slow news week, turns out it was anything but last week. So we'll get some help with much of note that happened last week with our two guests. But first, before we get to them, very quickly, voters are heading to the polls this week in five states on Tuesday, specifically in Connecticut, Delaware, New York, Rhode Island, and Wisconsin. Actually, on Saturday as well in Alaska, Hawaii, North Dakota. Those are Democratic caucuses, I believe, only in those in that case on Saturday. But there are presidential primaries and other elections occasionally on those ballots that are really more of note, given the fact that the leading presidential candidates in both of the Republican and Democratic parties, that would be Donald J. Trump and President Joe Biden, respectively, have already secured the number of delegates that they'll need to officially be named as their respective parties' 2024 presidential nominees at their national conventions this summer. of course, we will, as always, be keeping our eyes on any reported problems for voters at the polls and some of the other contests on the ballot this week, including two constitutional amendments that we are watching, even a few others seem to be, in Wisconsin, where Republicans have added two questions to the ballot regarding voting restrictions and, frankly, how they hope to make voting more difficult and or make voter suppression easier before the November presidential election in the Badger State. If these otherwise benign-sounding constitutional questions 1 and 2 on Tuesday's ballot are approved by voters, which will make it both more difficult for officials in Wisconsin's thousands of towns to run elections at all this November, and more difficult for help to be provided to both officials and voters by third-party pro-democracy groups and contractors and so forth. So we'll keep our eyes on that and probably get into more details later in the week. There have also been a number of other voting and election-related news items of note over the past week since we've been gone. I hope to be making sense of those with you in the days ahead as the week moves on. But since I assume everyone listening to this show took last week off from the news as well. I mean, why would you follow it if we were not here to help you do so? And as there was so much extraordinary news day after day after day, I'd kind of like to use today to sort of get caught up on much that we missed and get back up to speed after the past week while I was trying to occasionally look the other direction. And as per doctor's orders, rest my voice. So to help us all, or to help me anyway, get back up to speed, I've called in two old friends, I do believe, who did not spend last week looking the other direction. So hopefully they can help me at least, and perhaps all of us, sort of get back onto the same page after a wild week. And in advance, I'm sorry to say, of many more such wild weeks that will come in the days ahead, I suspect. You'll know at least one, if not both, of our guests today. Here to help me out, our old pal Driftglass, sometimes known as simply Bill. He is back with us today. Of course, he is the longtime progressive blogger and host of the Professional Left podcast, which he and his wife, Fran, otherwise known as Blue Gal, record every Friday, rain or shine, as they like to say, from their home in what they lovingly describe as flyover country, Illinois. Welcome back, Mr. Driftglass, or Mr. Bill. I don't know. Welcome back either way.
Well, thank you, Brett. It's a pleasure to be back.
Pleasure to have you. And as I understand it, it is also your 19th blogiversary at your blog, driftglass.blogspot.com today. Well, congratulations, youngster.
Thank you. Thank you. I look back.
Yeah.
19 years at the coalface. I look back at the first posts I ever did. They were about the collapse of the Republican Party into a fascist poo hole and the rise of fundamentalism as the controlling force inside the Republican Party and the fact that they can be so easily persuaded to do terrible things by liars who wave Bibles around.
Huh.
So, you know.
Gosh, if only anybody had listened to you 19 years ago.
Yeah, it was heresy back then. Now it's, you know, a never Trumper business model.
Yeah, exactly. Well,
it was heresy.
Exactly. And by the way, speaking of heresy and of Driftglass' wife, Fran, otherwise known as Blue Gal on the Twitters, we are delighted to actually be joined by Fran today. That would be Frances Langham. In addition to being executive producer of the Pro Left podcast, she is also an associate editor at our friend John Amato's great longtime troublemaking and muckraking blog, Crooks and Lawyers, Crooks and Liars. Oh, Fran, great to have you finally on with us here on the broadcast as well. Welcome to it.
It's great to be here. Thank you, Brad.
So, guys, I was while I was trying to not pay attention last week, it was actually difficult to avoid this fire hose of news coming in, especially, you know, via iPhone alerts, whether I wanted to hear about it or not. So I thought what I would do today, which we don't normally do, is sort of run through some of the major headlines as they came in over the past week and sort of chit-chat our way through them to place them in context and or understand why any of them are important or are, in many cases, are not important to our lives right now. So feel free to jump in and or interrupt any of these stories as you see fit. I do have some questions, but I do welcome your input here. As we signed off just over a week ago or so, D.C. was going through its pretend Sturm und Drang about a potential government shutdown again. And then at the last minute, Republican House Speaker Mike Johnson, with the help of House Democrats, finally adopted the last of the new government funding measures for fiscal year 2024. Now, it was about 6 months late after a series of continuing resolutions to keep the government open. But the final agreement avoided a full government shutdown that many had feared and many in the Republican Congressional Caucus had arguably hoped for. But the measure in the House, receiving more Democratic votes than Republican ones, resulted in Georgia's extreme MAGA Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene calling for the removal yet again of the House Speaker via another call to vacate the chair, akin to the one that resulted in Kevin McCarthy's ouster and Mike Johnson's ascendancy to the Speaker's chair. Fran, I know you covered Marjorie Taylor Greene's call to vacate the chair at Crooks and Liars.
Yep.
But after her initial demand, I have not heard a peep about it. Why not?
Well,
is
they're
she
on
even,
vacation.
Is she being ignored by her own? Is that what it is? Is it?
No, this is the Donald Trump way of getting something done, which is to make a big stink and do a press conference and then promise that in 2 weeks, you know, which is something Trump always says, well, I'll have your health care plan in 2 weeks. I'll have Melania's immigration papers in 2 weeks. And you know, then the news dumps that happen every single day and the fruit fly memory hole of the Washington media just forgets that these things happened or that they were promised. And so Marjorie Taylor Greene just made this announcement and had the big press conference on the stairs of the Capitol building and so forth. And everyone went on a 2 week Easter vacation. And so it will be very interesting to see what she decides to do in 2 weeks when Congress returns, because she is also the impeachment manager for the Mayorkas impeachment.
And also
Mike Johnson was on the Sunday shows this weekend calling Marjorie Taylor Greene his friend. So who knows what that means?
And it only takes one person at this point, right? If she she wants to have a call to vacate the chair, she gets to call for it, and then they must hold a vote, as I understand it, right?
Yep. Yes, but her colleagues in on the House Republican side don't seem to be all that interested in doing it, especially given that it's just a few months till the election.
Now,
you kind of need a speaker.
Sort of, I guess.
Yep. Well, you kind of do. But remember, it is kind of strange that, you know, Mike Johnson is kind of a MAGA dude who was part of the insurrection plotting and part of trying to get the insurrection going. So maybe this is some performative, oh, we're going to oust Mike Johnson now, but they actually still want to keep him in, perhaps.
Right.
We'll find out.
How many ballots is it going to take? 30 to find a new speaker?
Yeah.
15 to find him.
Exactly. So. All right. On Sunday then, so that was late last week. On Sunday then last week, and it frankly, given everything that's happened, it's hard to believe that this was barely just over a week ago, Driftglass. At least 144 concert goers were killed at a music venue in Moscow. A horrific attack said to have been carried out by ISIS, an ISIS affiliate, which U.S. had warned about in advance and Russian President Vladimir Putin apparently ignored before somehow going on to blame the U.S. and Ukraine for the attack. Driftglass, Russia and their supporters on the American right, and frankly, too many on the American left, I'm afraid, tried to, you know, sort of work their social media magic on this in the hours after the attack to somehow blame U.S. and Ukraine. But should we take the fact that it has seemingly the attack has seemingly disappeared from the news entirely, it seems, over the past week, unless I'm missing something? Should we take from that even they were not able to successfully disinform the public about this one?
Well, you know, there's always after these things the cannon fire of conspiracy. What'll stick to the wall? What can we get to stick to the wall? Was the Moscow theater attack Antifa? Was it Black Lives Matter? Was it the new Black Panther Party? There's always a scary person or group out there that the right can pin everything on. They're the Emmanuel Goldstein the eternal villain from 1984 is always available. But you have to find a way to word jazz it, connect it to the actual event. Mm-hmm. And if that fails, they just, you know, drop it and move on to the next one, because there's always a next one. There's always a next crisis. There's always a next scandal, even if they have to make one up, that is, they can blame on somebody. It's just that they want to go on the record as saying, this is probably Biden, it's probably Ukraine. And then when it turns out not to be so, by that time, there are already, you know, three scandals down the road.
Yeah. So there's no penalty for being wrong for these people.
No.
And by the way, thank you for mentioning the new Black Panther Party. I appreciate that.
Lest we forget.
Yes. You know? Yes. I'll never forget. Now we're not even to Monday, last Monday, when things really began to get crazy. Last Monday, of course, was the supposed deadline day for Trump to cough up either the cash or a bond in the amount of some $450 million in his civil fraud case in New York. But the New York Appeals Court, in a decision that they have still yet to explain, to my knowledge, reduced the amount of Trump's bond that he'd have to file, not the actual judgment, but the bond, to just $175 million while he appeals. And they gave him 10 more days to come up with that $175 million in bonds or cash. Fran, I know you cover the internets and the right-wing media closely on these things. Mm-hmm. As I understand it, Trump was out there trying to describe that decision from the appeals court as a victory. It arguably is. But he immediately misrepresented it to suggest that the court had cut the judgment itself.
Right.
So
And Fox News did the same thing.
Did they?
Judge Jeanine Pirro did the same thing.
Wow.
Right.
And she's a judge. Yeah. She should know.
And
a judge. She knows better than that. Right.
Well, how did all that land? Are they buying that?
Well, he's got till Friday. He's got till Fridays to come up with $175 million. The commentators on MSNBC, one of them in particular said, you know, these bonds are not supposed to be punitive. They're simply there to make sure you show up for court.
Right.
And that when you do the appeal, you're serious about it. Mm-hmm. And so doing that, lowering that bond was not unusual. But he still only has till Friday to come up with that amount of money. And as a presidential candidate, you know, this really does make him liable for corruption, for easy buying from a foreign power. His press conference where someone asked him, can you get money from a foreign country? And he said, I don't know if I'm allowed to do that. Maybe I am. And that does not lead to people feeling secure in the knowledge that he's not going to get it.
You know, no, it doesn't. And as a matter of fact, when he made that comment, and we don't have that clip, but he had that tone in his voice that reminded me completely of his comments when he was asked. Remember that clip on Air Force One when he was asked if he had paid hush money to Stormy Daniels? He said, I don't think so.
You have to ask Michael Cohen.
Right.
Right.
It sounded exactly like that same denial.
It did.
Bill, will he be able to come up with that $175 million this Friday, you say?
Oh, this Friday? I don't know. He told the court that he was turned down by 30 companies for the higher amount. So is it that he is bargaining and this is art of the deal, so to speak?
Mm-hmm.
Does he have someone on the line who is willing to give that much? Time will tell. We'll see what happens on Friday.
On that same Monday last week, a so-called special purpose acquisition company, or SPAC, approved a merger with Trump's media company, which does nothing more than run his money-losing Truth Social platform. They approved the merger to become a public company. Subsequently, the stock surged more than 50% over the next few days, supposedly increasing Trump's net worth by anywhere from $3 to $6 billion. Now, I do note that the new merged company's stock, now publicly trading with the symbol DJT, actually plunged more than 20% in trading on Monday when I last checked, since its last high. But Driftglass, isn't this now little more than a new way for Trump to receive bribes from pretty much anybody. Remember, as was the case with his D.C. hotel when he last served. But in that case, you know, you actually had to sort of show up or something. But this, it seems like anyone who, you know, Saudi Arabia can just purchase $1 million worth of shares in DJT if he's able to get back into the White House. Is there anything in place that might stop something like that from happening that you know of?
Oh, yeah, there are regulations and traditions about presidents putting things in blind trusts and so on, but they're not enforceable and Trump blows them off. So no, in point of fact, no. This is a $3 million valuation company that is now suddenly worth $3 billion,
mm-hmm.
which is, you know, which is bribery. It's straight up bribery. It's yeah, straight mm-hmm. up giving this guy 1,000 times more than his company is worth for whatever consideration. And it's also a bit of a, you know, pump and dump scam because we jack the price up, we watch the stock price rise, then we sell off quick and take the profit, which is also viable. Although I don't think Trump's allowed to sell off until
for 60 months.
Days or something like that.
It's
6 months?
Yeah. 6 months.
6 months, yeah.
Yeah. So, but again, as with every other Trump scam, Trump University, Trump ham, Trump steak, Trump vodka, this it's meant to fold up and move on. So whatever happens, again, he'll have whatever he can profit from this in his pockets by the time it hits the fan.
Don't be the last sucker holding the bag. I'm looking at it on Monday. DJT dropped 21.5%. But
thanks,
you know,
Biden. It's the Biden stock market that you blame,
exactly.
Really. Don't you think that's the real problem with Biden and his inflation?
And it could go right back up tomorrow. And that money will eventually go into Donald Trump's pockets. Last Monday, the new start date was set for Trump's felony hush money trial in New York related to payments to porn star Stormy Daniels to help him cheat to win the 2016 presidential election. It is not it's now set to begin jury selection on tax day. Ironically enough, April 15. That's about 2 weeks away when the former president will face trial for 34 felony counts in New York State in that case. And yet, for some reason that I have never really understood, many have been dismissing this particular case as, oh, that's a minor case. Fran, he cheated to win the presidential election. He made fraudulent payments to cover it up while he was in the Oval Office. How far has the bar been lowered here that it's considered, oh, no big deal? This case is no big deal.
Well, this is one area where I strongly disagree with former House Speaker Nancy Pelosi. I think we should have impeached him for porn star hush money.
Mm-hmm.
Is a case that everybody can understand. He paid money to a porn star that he slept with to hide it from his wife and to hide it from the voters.
Mm-hmm.
Period. And he signed one of the checks in the Oval Office to reimburse Michael Cohen.
Yep.
This is not complicated. And I don't know if you've noticed the breaking news today that his lawyers are now asking to suspend this case indefinitely due to pretrial publicity. Which I reacted on Twitter to, we did what now? He was truthing over 70 times on Easter Sunday
right.
about this case. What pretrial publicity has he not contributed to?
Right, exactly.
But, you know, they're throwing all the jello at the walls. And I do believe that Donald Trump is willing to spend two or three nights in jail
mm-hmm.
violating the gag orders in order to make this case not happen.
Do you think that's what he, do you think he wants happen. That? Do you think he wants to violate it and get thrown in jail?
I think he will do anything to make the evidence that's going to appear in this case not come to trial.
Hmm.
And Liz Cheney said this, and she had a huge audience in Iowa last week mm-hmm. while you were gone,
mm-hmm.
Talking about all of these cases and the fact that Donald Trump, through his lawyers, knows all of the evidence through discovery that's going to be presented at trial. So uh-huh. he knows how bad it's going to be in all of the cases that he's up against.
Mm.
And delay is his only option.
So
if these go to trial, they are going to be the center of the news cycle. and everyone's going to know what he did.
Wow. So we can probably expect him to do some pretty crazy things in order to avoid getting those trials started, like going to jail, which would give him an
even if it means going to jail. Yeah,
which would be a huge, he'll probably turn that into a huge theatrical
that's
event.
Martyrdom. That's martyrdom. And martyrdom. Absolutely.
Bill, are they going to have to expand the as I believe Bragg's District Attorney Alvin Bragg is seeking? Are they going to have to expand the gag order that was placed on him that does not gags? I guess the witnesses gags him from attacking witnesses and prosecutors and jurors and court staff, but not Alvin Bragg, the prosecutor, the Manhattan DA himself, or the judge or the judge's daughter. Is the judge going to have to expand the gag order? Or, again, is this something that Donald Trump wants? Does he want to be thrown in jail for a night or two?
He wants to push it as far as he can. And if he spends a night or two in jail, and in jail, by jail, he'll be in at-home confinement. I mean, he's not going to you're going to see bars clicking in front of him. Mm. He won't be in any military prison. As much as we all pray that Guantanamo Bay is still open and there's still one bed left there, we can ship him off there for the time being. He'll push it. He'll break the law. He's been breaking the law all along. He breaks the law with impunity. And every time this isn't just Donald Trump. Let's be very clear. The one cardinal sin you can never commit on the right is admitting you're wrong. You can never admit you're wrong. And whenever you're cornered, you double down. You scream louder, you pound the table harder, and that's all he's going to do. And it works because he has a mob of, 60 million meatheads behind him who think that's a great idea. So if he shuts up, he loses. Mm-hmm. But if he martyrs himself, why? He went to prison for you. I went just like Jesus. I suffered for you. Mm-hmm. And, what's the downside? A couple of days inconvenient. You won't be able to go to the golf course.
And I wonder, I wonder if that is one of the things that may ultimately prevent these judges from taking that kind of action, knowing that they may be giving him exactly what he wants.
I think that's exactly what Engoron felt.
Yeah.
That he was straddling that horse. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
All right, yeah. We have to keep moving. We're still on only Monday last week. So also
good Lord.
I mean, it was that kind of a week. It really was. So on Monday, the UN Security Council finally adopted a resolution calling for a ceasefire in Gaza and the return of all hostages. It only passed in the Security Council because the U.S., which abstained from the vote, finally did not use its veto power on the panel to block such a measure in the Security Council. That's a big deal. And as Israel is a party to the UN, they are supposed to, they are required to follow, any resolutions that are adopted by the UN, by the Security Council. Now, needless to say, Israel is furious. Apparently, they're just ignoring this resolution. But Bill, I'll let you have this one. You're welcome. Will the U.S. decision?
Thanks so much.
Will the decision to allow for the U.S. to allow that resolution to pass, will that make any difference to those here in the U.S. on the left who have been critical of Joe Biden and his administration for their handling of Israel's war in Gaza since October 7 of last year?
No, because I can understand the principled objections of people on every side of this issue. Mm-hmm. I really can. Mm-hmm. But Joe Biden is not president of Israel. Bibi Netanyahu is president of Israel. And if you want that war stopped, it comes down to two countries and the war between them. And it doesn't matter what the UN does. It really doesn't. Mm. Because what did Stalin used to say that about the Pope? How many divisions does the Pope have?
Oh, yeah.
What are you going to do? What are you going to do, really? The UN's going to land in there with their blue helmets and keep these parties physically apart? I don't think so. Well, I don't think that's ever going
to
happen.
Well, the U.S. could stop selling arms to Israel.
Sure, we could.
Israel.
We could. But I don't think that's going to happen. And Israel is all the – my wife has better numbers on this than I do. The number one, two, or three arms manufacturer in the Middle East. Is that correct, Darlene?
They're number one.
Yeah.
So they have their own arms. So they're just using arms.
Yes, they have their own arms. Arms manufacturing,
They don't need us, at least not for the long term, or for the short term to keep going.
They need us to be their protector. But this is such a horribly intractable problem. that there's no way to get out of it gracefully or without a lot of bloodshed. There just isn't. And people who think there is are going to be horribly disappointed and going to look for someone to blame. So it doesn't matter. If I don't know what Joe Biden could possibly do except land Marines and force the parties apart, which is not going to happen. Short of that, providing, you know, some supplies, some medical supplies, some food supplies, some water is about as far as we go. And it's horrifying, and there's no solution to it. And we're not used to that in this country.
Right.
We're not used to problems that don't have a solution. And we're not used to problems that last for decades. We're just not.
Yeah.
So it freaks us out when we confront one. There must be someone to blame, and we can't find that person. So we'll make one up.
All right.
And if I could add something to that real quick, which is that my beloved fellow Democrats who are rightfully traumatized by the pictures coming out of Gaza, don't elect Bibi Netanyahu president of the United States, which is what Trump is. Trump is only running for president to avoid accountability for his corruption. And Bibi Netanyahu is president of Israel only to avoid accountability for his corruption. And everyone in Israel knows this. I went to Brandeis University undergraduate. I have lots of Jewish friends. The amount of ignorance that the American press has about the left in Israel, people in Israel that want a two-state solution, people in Israel that want peace, people who are not on the side of Bibi Netanyahu are ignored in this country because of money, because of media, because of the kind of people who run the New York Times, etc. Don't elect Bibi Netanyahu president of the United States in the form of Trump.
And I think people don't understand. That's literally the case. He is literally avoiding felony charges, Netanyahu is, because he is prime minister. He will
they
face those charges. Which is why I keep trying to point out he will be removed after this war is over. Therefore, he has no incentive to ever end
to
this
ever
war.
End it. Yeah. Exactly. The forever war is his guarantee that he stays in power and out of prison.
I got to get to a break. We will come back because we're not even, we're just finishing Monday, which was also the day that P. Diddy Combs's homes were searched. That was the night that the Francis Scott Key Bridge in Baltimore collapsed after being struck by a cargo ship, killing some six workers on that bridge. That was all on Monday. But the big news day last week was Tuesday. That we will get to after a break right here on the broadcast with our special last week today coverage with Driftglass and Francis Langham of Pro Left Podcast. I'm Brad Friedman. Don't go away.
What the public hears on the public airwaves matters. At the Bradcast, we do our best to bring you accurate news and analysis on the issues that actually matter, and we do it all independently without corporate or political influence. But we can't do it without you, now more than ever. Please help us stay on your public airwaves by going to bradblog.com/donate to help keep us going. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
Hey, this is Brad. You're listening to an encore presentation of the Bradcast.
Laura Trump, what's going on? You're running the RNC, but it's a sad song. Fundraising's low, can't make the mark. Republicans losing, it's getting dark. Oh, Laura, Laura, what have you done?
Oh,
the party's falling down, it's no longer fun.
Oh, Laura. Welcome back to the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. That is a either great or terrible song about Laura Trump. Take your pick that I learned about thanks to Francis Langham, the associate editor of Crooks and Liars, where she had that song about Lara Trump. I don't know. Posted. Fran is otherwise known as Blue Gal. She is one of our two guests today, along with her husband, Driftglass, the co-host of the Professional Left Podcast, along with Fran And also the happy birthday boy at driftglass.blogspot.com, where the blog is 19 years old today. All right, guys, let's continue moving through last week today. I'm not even sure that it was even close to the most important news of the day on Tuesday, on a day that the Supreme Court heard oral arguments to place a nationwide ban on the use of the abortion drug mifepristone. The good news is I hear it did not go well for the anti-abortion opponents. It was also the day on Tuesday of last week when the top law enforcement official in Texas, that would be Republican Attorney General Ken Paxton, somehow was able to cut a deal to avoid trial in decade-long felony securities fraud charges against him in Texas. Those seem both more important, but it seemed like everyone was focused on last Tuesday on corrupt former RNC chair and attempted presidential election theft Ronna Romney McDaniels being let go by NBC News just days after her controversial $300,000 a year hiring as an on-air analyst just days earlier. Driftglass, I confess when I heard about this controversy blowing up last week, my initial thought was, well, great, now they can press Ronna McDaniel on all of their shows, as they sort of have with another former RNC chair, Michael Steele, over the years, into sort of becoming another anti-Trump, pro-democracy force. So, Bill, as someone who, as I recall, has been very critical of MSNBC bringing over so many Republicans as contributors and even hosts over the years, is that the wrong way to be, that I should be looking at this? Why is Ronna having her any different from Michael Steele or for Nicole Wallace or Joe Scarborough, who both host MSNBC shows?
That is true, and I appreciate you setting me up like this.
You're welcome.
It's very nice of you.
At least I can do.
I have extraordinarily bad feelings about Michael Steele that we can talk about on a different day.
Uh-huh.
But Ronna McDaniel was is part of the conspiracy. She's part of the coup. She's an assistant coup plotter. She has not abjured herself from that. She has not denied it. She has not rendered her garments and confessed and done all the things that one hopes one would do after committing such a heinous crime. And 24 seconds after leaving the position that she groveled for Donald Trump, that she kissed his butt, she changed her name to please him.
Mm-hmm.
Boom, over to NBC. NBC hired her to be on-air talent. And that was extraordinarily offensive. You can have the guests you want, I suppose, on your show,
mm-hmm.
but to hire this person as one of the gang, one of the crew, because you're not allowed to talk trash about people who you are colleagues with, apparently, on any of the networks. You're just not.
Mm-hmm.
So it puts them, there's two halves of the story. The first is the amount of effort that CBS, NBC, ABC all went through in a bidding war to get this woman on their staff,
mm-hmm.
and then the amount of courting and wooing they did and bumping up her salary to $300,000 a year because you're going to put you on NBC and MSNBC, completely oblivious to the fact that it was horrendously offensive to anyone who's paid any attention to the actual news during, say, the last, 7 years, and that she is an unrepentant, unreconstructed criminal and should be treated as such. And it never occurred to the people who run the network, who run the news division, who run NBC, who run the holding company, who run Comcast, that anyone would have a problem with this. And that right there is the problem.
Mm.
It didn't occur to anyone who does news that putting this kind of monster in the middle of their happy little family might tick someone off, because it's all just a show, right? She says on the air, they paid me money at the RNC to do what they wanted me to do, and I did that. Now I'm here, so you're going to pay me, so I'll do this thing over here. Because, it might as well just say, look, it's just a change of costume, because we all know this is BS. We all know it's a show.
Yeah, and if you just pay me enough, I'll say whatever you want me to say.
Yeah.
Why?
There is a profession where you can pay people to put on costumes and do what you want, and it's called prostitution. and that's what she was saying. Look, I'm a prostitute. But so are all of you,
yep.
because
yep.
we all do this. You all compromise. You all turn your back. Michael Steele has a long and illustrious record of kissing Rush Limbaugh's butt and lying about Barack Obama. Has he ever apologized for any of that? No, but he's a member of the family now, so we're all good.
Mm.
But she didn't, they didn't warm her up. It took them 2.5-3 years to get Michael Steele from a guy in the background you call on occasionally to having his own show on Sunday morning.
Right.
But they bumped her straight into the lineup.
Yep.
And you know, there was no redemption period. There was no time to whitewash her record to make her acceptable to the public.
Mm. We did 2 shows on this at the Professional Left podcast.
Mm-hmm.
And you better not wind up Dirk Glass on this topic anymore. You'll have no more show left.
Okay. All right. Well, I was going to ask you, Fran, why they hired her in the first place. Can you answer that in about 30 seconds?
I don't think the network executives at NBC, Comcast, or MSNBC actually watch the news. I think they see it as a product to sell advertising.
Uh-huh.
And so getting Rana was a get because other networks wanted her, so that makes us win. And it's treated just like that. Wow. It's a game.
And the New York Times, I should note, found it necessary, as David Kurtz reports over at TPM, to hand-wring over the non-issue of how to give so-called conservatives a voice. quote, the episode underscored the deeply partisan sphere in which news organizations are trying to operate and the challenge of fairly representing conservative and pro-Trump viewpoints in their coverage. If major Republican Party figures like Ms. McDaniel are deemed unacceptable by viewers or colleagues, and then as Kurtz correctly notes, he says, bear with me here because this gets complicated. You can still wait for it. Interview conservatives and pro-Trump Republicans. Journalism does not require paying a deeply compromised pro-Trump but ousted by Trump figure 6 figures annually to spout talking points from inside your TV studio. Good point. Just invite her on, interview her, see how that goes, and see if she wants to work for you after a few weeks. That was also on, I think, are we on Tuesday? Yeah, WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange avoided extradition for now to the U.S. from the U.K. on espionage charges. Trump's SPAC continued to gain billions in value on the first day of public trading. As I said, it has plunged since then. Arizona's failed 2022 Republican gubernatorial candidate and conspiratorial election liar, Carrie Lake, she conceded last Tuesday that she had no evidence of election fraud in a defamation suit she's facing that was filed against her by Stephen Richer, the Republican county recorder. That's the chief election official in Maricopa County. That's Phoenix. Lake asked the judge to enter a default judgment against her on the liability portion of the suit and move straight to the damages phase of the case, which she is still disputing, but she did not dispute the facts. Bill Driftglass, in defamation case after defamation case, these MAGA folks are just getting clobbered in court to the tune of hundreds of millions of dollars. Just ask Rudy, does any of this shore up confidence in our judicial system as you see it, or does the real test still remain in the criminal trials to come?
Well, it does not reassure me. It's great that happens. It's great that people are being found, you know, are confessing or owning to their facts. But I think they're all betting on Donald Trump being president.
Mm-hmm.
And him just blanket pardoning everyone he can lay his hands on.
Well, this is a state civil suit. He can't make this one go away if the judge, you know, fines her $50 million.
You'd think so, wouldn't you? But what if he sends in the National Guard to release this hostage that this hostile state has put behind bars, this good Christian woman who this state has cruelly put behind bars? How are these blue states allowed to keep hostages? Because that's how he refers to the J6 people.
Yeah.
They're hostages.
Yeah.
So I think once you cede your country to a fascist regime, all the little safeguards downstream of that just sort of fall away.
That we think are the things we think are safeguards, but turn out to not be. Or I guess you can say, hey, you know, let's buy $50 million more of DJT stock, and I'll just shoot that on over to her to take care of it.
Right.
Also on big, and I got to move quick, sorry, big political, very big political news, it seems to me, last Tuesday. Marilyn Lands, an Alabama Democrat who made reproductive rights a central part of her campaign, she flipped a red state house seat in Alabama flipped it from red to blue in a special election. And this is a seat that she had just lost in 2022 by 7 points. She won it last Tuesday in the special election by 25 points. Following the state's back and forth over reproductive rights regarding in vitro fertilization, put them on hold. And so regarding IVF, Fran, what should we or should we not take from what happened in Alabama last week? Am I overemphasizing this?
Well, I lived in Alabama for 14 years, went through infertility treatment in Alabama, and have all three of my children born in Alabama. So I have kind of personal stake in all this story. This is the power of special elections as well. You have to remember that when she lost in 2022, there were over 14,000 votes cast. In the special election, there were less than 7,000 votes cast. The power of getting the word out through postcards to voters, activism nationwide to make this a nationwide election and got the attention of Democratic voters to turn out. So that excitement generated through a nationwide effort to get this woman elected is what worked. This issue is passionate. There are good Baptist ladies in Alabama who have IVF grandbabies. There are plenty of good Baptist women in Alabama who take that $400 trip to Atlanta to have an abortion. And let me tell you, it is personal. And they are setting aside their, you know, just bland, let's just vote Republican because Jesus, because Alabama and the rest of the Republican Party is taking away their bodily autonomy.
And you rightfully, you know, cite that this was a special election. So you get a lot of focus on it. You can get people out for it. Now, setting aside the fact that, you know, special elections used to benefit Republicans more. Now they seem to benefit Democrats more. But
absolutely. That is a flip.
And normally I would say, well, you know, it's OK, chalk it up to that. But when you go from losing by 7 points 2 years ago to winning by 25 points just 2 years later in a special election, it does make you wonder, are we going to see, would you expect to see a similar shift of some sort, even in a state like Alabama, when we get to the general election, or do we just return back to the old ways by then?
Oh, I think most Alabamian Republicans, which who are in the majority in Alabama, will vote for Trump in the general election if they don't stay home.
Mm-hmm.
And it just depends on how big an embarrassment Donald Trump becomes between now and the general election.
But we could see changes in like the down the ticket, no? In races like this where you have a candidate?
I think it's much more important for us to have a motivated Democratic base turning out in these elections than to try to persuade Republicans to change their mind. I think the Democratic Party is highly motivated and angry and tired of Trump and wants to get rid of him forever. And so that turnout, I don't think you're going to persuade Republicans to change their votes, but I think you can persuade disaffected blue dots in red states to say, no, we're going to turn out and we're going to flip these states.
Drift Glass, I must get to Wednesday's news, but before I do, any thoughts? Tuesday was the day that Donald Trump introduced his American Bibles for $59.99. Any thoughts you have on the only Bible endorsed by the disgraced former president?
Well, since you can't just go out and buy a Bible just anywhere, like a motel or a drawer someplace in a hotel or any bookstore in the free world or online or on floppy disks or get an alarm clock that reads, you know, Bible verses to you every hour on the hour. Good thing he did this to raise money to pay for the court costs of paying off a prostitute that he was sleeping with while his wife was nursing their child. So the circle of absolute blasphemy is now complete. It's almost too perfect. You would reject this as a script.
You are just so cynical, Driftglass. I don't know how
it is true that Trump, because his name is on it, is going to get the royalties from this, from a publicly free available Bible. He's going to get royalties.
Yeah, but you can't just get the U.S. Constitution anywhere for free. wait, yes you can, and that's included in this Bible for $60.
I mean, it's
bucks.
Just straight
but can you
up
get
grift?
A leak? Can you get a Lee Greenwood song?
That's true.
Lee Greenwood endorsed.
See? Does it come with an MP3 of that stupid song?
Mine's 6 to 8 weeks, but it does come with no extra charge, a second Corinthian. So, you know,
there you go. It's Easter week. Mind your manners, Bill. News, of course, kept
pounding. Stormy Daniels is a porn star, not a prostitute.
She's right.
I apologize. Yes.
I apologize.
God, Bill, that was just so rude of you to call her that. I didn't realize. It just slipped. Yeah, it's a dude thing. Mm-hmm. All right, the news, of course, kept pounding on Wednesday. The far-right extremist Fifth U.S. Court of Appeals, surprisingly for now, kept a block on Texas's SB4 law, which would empower Texas state and local police and judges to arrest and detain and deport anyone they suspect of being an undocumented immigrant. A settlement was reached in a lawsuit between Florida Governor Ron DeSantis' allies and the Disney company regarding the state's big government takeover of the land management district where Disney World is located in Florida after DeSantis had his right-wing state legislature actually change state law to punish Disney in response to Disney's opposition to his Don't Say Gay law, because you know how much Republicans hate big government. Former Democratic vice presidential candidate, almost Republican vice presidential candidate, chair of the secretive third-party presidential candidate wannabe group calling itself No Labels, and four-term U.S. Senator Joe Lieberman died at age 82 after what is being described as complications following a fall last week. Now, Driftglass, I have always been of the mind to not speak ill of the dead, at least not right after they die.
Right.
But it's been several days now, and frankly, my own personal preferences do not keep either of you from sharing any thoughts you may wish to. Driftglass,
well,
you got any? Yeah.
I limited my comments because I've written about Lieberman extensively on my 19-year-old blog.
Uh-huh.
But I limited my comments to one line from Macbeth, Act 1, Scene 4. Nothing in his life became him like the leaving it.
Oh.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
Well, that's well said. Fran, do you have any Shakespeare you'd like to add to the topic?
No.
Okay.
I have nothing to say about Joe Lieberman at all.
In other words, I'm glad that he was not somebody who had any more influence on U.S. politics, and that hopefully No Labels will decide to evaporate.
Now, was he a prostitute or a porn star? Just to I don't want to confuse. A bit more accountability for Trump's 2020 anti-democracy crew last Wednesday, as former Trump lawyer John Eastman, a key architect behind his Trump's failed fake electors plot to steal the election on January 6th, had his law license suspended in California for those efforts. Fran, the henchmen, Giuliani, Eastman, Sidney Powell, Peter Navarro, et cetera, they're paying a price for Trump's crimes over his attempted election theft. But so far, not Donald Trump, and it seems impossible to believe that he will pay any price before the election. Is something wrong with our judicial system, or is this situation just so insane that, you know, it's simply not geared for something like this?
I think our entire United States system is not geared for something like Donald Trump. From the time he came down the escalator, our media, our courts is just not prepared for someone who so blatantly, first of all, white money, lots of money, and brazen lying. And then the backing of a major political party that sold their soul for an election and wanting that high again. I think the base, the Republican base, got a real high from surprising everyone in 2016, and they've been pursuing that high behind Trump ever since. And they keep losing because that was a one-off. Mm. And that pursuit of that high has led to a mob cult mentality that the elected officials of the Republican Party don't seem to know how to handle. I know Driftglass has a lot of opinions about this.
Unfortunately, Driftglass, we can't hear it because we got to get out. we're very close to the end, I'm sorry to say, because we could do a whole show, obviously, on this, and we probably will. But I do want to get to one last question. I'm only going to have about 30 seconds for it. But Sam Bankman-Fried was sentenced to 25 years in prison for cryptocurrency fraud. Apparently, we had no problem doing that fairly quickly. House Speaker Mike Johnson has promised to deliver the impeachment articles to the U.S. Senate, which against Alejandro Mayorkas, the Department of Homeland Security Secretary, which supposedly means the Senate has to stop and have a trial. But the big, big news from last Thursday, of course, was Robert F. Kennedy Jr., who's running for as an independent for president, announcing his running mate would be Nicole Shanahan, the 38-year-old philanthropist and former wife of one of Google's billionaire co-founders. Drift Glass, I received some email of late from someone out here in California criticizing me for my lack of coverage of Bobby's run for president, charging that though he's only on the ballot in 8 states, I should cover him more. Should I? And how should folks like you and Fran and me cover RFK's run?
Note that he has picked for his running mate a big bag of money and who's as crazy as he is, and then move on to the next story, because that's really all there is to it.
Yep.
And
Ditto.
Fran, she is apparently an opponent of IVF.
She's an opponent of a lot of things. Unfortunately for her, she has, as I do, a child with autism, and that has led her down a path of questioning the medical community. That happens to a lot of autism moms who are desperate for answers. I feel sorry for her, as I do for all autism moms who have challenges with that. You know, that's what's happened with her. And of course, it dovetails perfectly with some of the wacky stands that RFK Jr. has taken as well.
So for now, I'm covering RFK Jr. quite enough?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, about as much as Joe Lieberman,
Too much.
That's about right level.
Yeah. Oh, there you go. Okay. We have got to get out, guys. But I want to thank you for helping us at least get caught up with much of the news from last week. Boy, there was a lot of it. There's going to be more to come. But thanks for getting us there after a week off. Greatly appreciated. Drift Glass, otherwise known as Bill, otherwise known as Mr. _ Electrico on Twitter. Congratulations on your 19th year as a blogger. You can find his blog at driftglass.blogspot.com. And you can find him every week or more doing the podcast with his wife, Frances Langham, who is also known as Blue Gal on Twitter. She's also the associate editor at Crooks and Liars, along with co-hosting the Professional Left podcast, which you can and should find at proleftpodcast.com. Thank you, guys.
Proleft,
what did I say? Oh, proleftpod.com. Oh, I was so close to not screwing
up. Come on.
Working on it. It's just my 20th year, so I think I learned by now. Let me get out.
Internet years, man. Internet years.
I've got to say thanks to Desi Doyen as well. Thanks to all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. If you missed any portion of today's program, download it anytime for free at bradblog.com. Now 20 years old. You can also drop me email. I'm bradcast@bradblog.com on the Facebooks, Mastodons, and sites still known as Twitter. I am simply The Brad Blog. We will see you there until we see you back here tomorrow. I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world. You're listening to The Bradcast. We are 100% listener-supported thanks to listeners like you who stop by bradblog.com/donate.